Running your own business can feel isolating, but you don't have to figure it all out alone. Join a free guest session inside the Smashing the Plateau community to get fresh ideas and real solutions to your biggest business challenge. Spots are limited. Reserve yours now at smashingtheplateau.com/guest. That's smashingtheplateau.com/guest.
Nobody wants what I'm selling, which is always a challenge. Nobody wakes up in the morning and says, boy, I really want to talk to my lawyer today. I can't wait. So the idea was, because people would tend to call me when, you know, things were already a problem and now the issue was going to be much more expensive to resolve. If we do things on a flat fee basis, then, you know, there's no reason you can't pick up the phone and we can talk for 10 or 15 minutes.
Today's guest is Tripp Stephen Fried, who has built his practice around a deceptively simple idea. What if working with an attorney actually felt like a relief? In this episode, Tripp shares how he flipped the traditional legal model on its head by focusing on what clients want, not just what they need. We talk about selling peace of mind over paperwork, how involuntary entrepreneurs can shift from fear to momentum, and why collaboration is no longer optional in today's fast-changing business landscape. Whether you're just starting out or navigating your next stage of growth, this conversation is full of grounded practical wisdom you won't want to miss. Tripp also dives into how understanding what your clients truly want, beyond what they say they need, can completely transform the way you sell your services. He shares hard-won lessons from 30 years in practice about building trust, staying accessible, and growing a business that clients actually look forward to calling. This is one of those episodes that will make you rethink how you communicate your own value, no matter what industry you're in. Now let's welcome Tripp Stephen Fried. Tripp is a business lawyer and consultant with the outside-the-box belief that attorneys can actually add value to the ventures they represent. Tripp, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So let's cut to the chase. What does it mean to be a business lawyer and consultant? Because usually people think of them differently.
Well, because I deal with transactions, mergers, contracts, stuff like that. The way that licensing is done is you're licensed from state to state, but the way the transactions are done, most of the ones I deal with now are international. So the idea that a person or a business should have to hire an attorney if you've got a supplier in Oklahoma and you've got someone in New York and a buyer in California, you know, a lot of these transactions have different actors in multiple states. So for the stuff that where I'm making suggestions, you know, it's easier to hold myself out as a consultant because then I can have a much broader role. Whereas if I'm doing it as an attorney, I'm just writing paper and giving legal advice, much less limiting.
Got it. And who's your typical client?
I've got a couple of clients that are pretty big, you know, doing $10 to $50 million, some even more a year. And then I've got clients that literally call me and say, I'm just starting out. I want to form an LLC and I need some help sort of putting the infrastructure together. And then the vast majority are somewhere in the middle. They're sort of growing in the process, maybe of a first raise or friends and family or seed round or something like that. So it's once they get to the point where they're looking at IPOs or looking at private money or private equity or something like that, they've usually grown out of me and they need someone on a more day-to-day basis. I act as a general counsel and consultant for lots of different companies. So once you get to a certain point where you need day-to-day services, you need to hire somebody or get a firm that can handle that capacity.
Yeah. And can you share a little bit about how you landed on your current business model?
Yeah, sort of by default. I started practicing when I was 24. Most people go to law school starting at 26, at least back in the day when I did. And these are the clients that came in when I was, you know, first starting out. There was a business that wanted to hire me. I really enjoyed the transactional stuff than the courtroom stuff. I was never much of a litigator, though I still do a little bit. And I just enjoy the aspect of being part of a team that's trying to grow a business. And it's one of those, you know, my dad was an OBGYN. And as a doctor, he really enjoyed that because he felt like he was, you know, most of the time people were walking away happy. They had a new baby and it was exciting. And this is kind of the same, not, you know, obviously not the same, but it's something positive. People are excited. They're looking forward to getting into business. So it's, I'd rather do that than, you know, divorces and bankruptcies and, you know, the depressing stuff.
Yeah. And when we spoke previously, you, I believe you mentioned that most business owners, when they're dealing with an attorney, they're reluctant to call because the meter's running.
Yes.
Right. And you tried to build your business model so your clients would want to call you and would call you when they needed you.
Right. That's the idea. And you know, what I've learned, I've been doing this for 30 years. So what I learned pretty quickly is nobody wants what I'm selling, which is always a challenge. Nobody wakes up in the morning and says, boy, I really want to talk to my lawyer today. I can't wait. And so the idea was, because people would tend to call me when, you know, things were already a problem and now the issue was going to be much more expensive to resolve. If we do things on a flat fee basis, then, you know, there's no reason you can't pick up the phone and we can talk for 10 or 15 minutes. And the flip side of that is I get, if clients want to talk to me, I have a much better understanding, not just of what their needs are, but of what motivates them, what their wants are. And then I know that some clients are particularly sensitive to certain issues and they're not going to care as much about others. So helping me communicate with them, I think, and making it easy for them really helps build a relationship and helps me retain, especially the bigger clients who could very easily go off and hire a big firm and stuff like that, because there's a relationship there. They trust me. They feel like they can call me and know, you know, if they've got a question anytime, I'm here.
Yeah. But your business model, unless things have changed drastically in the legal field, your business model might not be that popular among lawyers.
Well, there's more of it because the way the industry is going, there are so few people out there that can afford lawyers right now. Some of the 85 to 90% can't, that a lot of lawyers are changing the way. So, if, you know, when I started doing this 10, 15 years ago, sort of changing my approach, yeah, it wasn't real popular. But I think the economy, particularly with AI and a lot more entrepreneurs thinking they can do, you know, doing more themselves and being able to do more themselves, it's become more popular because lawyers are having to pivot just to keep the lights on.
Right. So one of the things that I know you understand quite well, having gone through this yourself, about understanding what your value proposition is, because as you said, typically nobody wants to buy what you're selling.
Yeah.
Right. You have a way of looking at a value proposition so that people really understand where the value is. And I wonder if you could share a little bit about that.
Well, the value in what I do is there's two. I mean, it's the first value is preventative. And that's the harder one to sell, because if you go to somebody and say, if you pay me $10,000 now, I'll save you $30,000 in the future. Their response usually is, I could save $10,000 right now just by hanging up the phone. But what I think the real value, what people really want to hear me say when they call me is two words, it's cool. If I start having to give explanations, then they start to get nervous. So the real value in what I in what I do is this sense that everything's under control. Nothing's going to come in and bite me that I don't know about. And that sort of letting them sleep at night, letting them know that the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed, they like, you know, people will pay for that much more than, say, if you call them up and say, hey, you want a, you know, operating agreement, or you want a a private placement memo or something like that. They're like, gee, no, thanks. If I present it as, I'm going to make this really easy for you, and you're going to be able to focus on the stuff in business that you like to do, then that's a much more compelling sale. So the value in what I do is really more holistic. If I focus on the numbers, people are like, well, I'm not going to have to pay for this unless something really goes wrong anyway. And then they're like, God, I don't let anything go wrong. Where if I'm saying to them, you're going to feel better on a day-to-day basis because you're not going to have to worry about someone from the IRS calling you or a labor department calling you, that they will pay for.
And when you advise clients, what do you tell them they need to do, or how do you approach their challenges regarding understanding and communicating their value proposition to their ideal customer. What advice do you have for them about how to nail their value proposition?
I think you've got to figure out what it's really more about wants than needs. When I was studying, you know, in law, and they don't prepare you for business in law school so at all. So you get out there and you're like, well, I'm an expert. I know everything. Who wants to ask me questions? And even when I was starting, that wasn't a great selling point. But now with AI, you know, information is not a commodity. I can't sell knowledge. I used to be able to say, I can go to the law library and look all this stuff up for you and answer your questions. Well, now people are sending me contracts that they generated on Claude and saying, was this okay? Can we use this? So I can't just sell information. What I have to do is find out what do these people really want from me. And what they really want from me is a sense of security. So understanding that, I go to them and that's what I try to sell. And I don't, you know, if they want my advice on sales and stuff like that, I'll give it. I try to stay in my lane, which is much more the infrastructure part of it. But when it comes to that, what I'll basically say to them is, well, what are the people that you are trying to reach? What do they want? What's going to make them happy? And a lot of times they'll come back and they'll say, well, I'm saving the money. You know, I talk to like headhunters or executive coaches or government procurement people. And they'll say, well, you know, I go to people and I say, I can save you money and I can add value that way. And that's usually you think to yourself, well, that's what most business owners want. But what I find is that really what they want is a sweetener. The saving the money part is they kind of see as a given. You know, if I'm going to hire you, I expect you to save me money because that's what you say you're going to do. It's really, but there's got to be something else that I'm providing that really hits them personally where they feel like, okay, now I'm safe. I feel secure. And so, you know, I tell my clients the same approach that I take. Get to know who you're selling to, find out what they want, and really focus on the want. If I go to people and I say to people, you need a 60-page operating agreement, they're not interested. If I go to people and I say to them, hey, if you have this document, you don't have to worry about this issue, this issue, this issue, that's going to resonate with them. So you find out what resonates and you stay with it.
Thank you. You deal with a lot of professionals whom you call involuntary entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
What do you think separates those involuntary entrepreneurs who are successful from those who struggle?
I mean, I think it's the same for most entrepreneurs. The problem with involuntary entrepreneurship is it's you don't have that excitement. But when people call and they say, we're starting a business, a lot of times they're very excited about it. For the involuntary entrepreneurs, there's more fear. They're doing it because they feel that they really don't have any other option. So approaching them, some of it is trying to get them excited, trying to get them to see the possibilities and look at it as an opportunity, not as a default or fallback or something like that. And in fact, I was reading an article by Andrew Yang, who was basically talking about how more and more college graduates, because they don't have as many opportunities, are going to be coming out. And a lot of them are going to choose entrepreneurship. And it's sort of, I mean, I started my own law practice when I was 24. I had no idea what I was doing. And I wandered around for 10 years trying to figure out what my niche was going to be and how I was going to practice and all that stuff. And I think that when I talk to them and I look at them, I think back to myself and I'm just like, how can I help these people not screw up quite as much as I did? And what I find is once they find something that they really like, that they're really excited about, and they see a path forward for their ideas, then it really does switch from sort of, gee, I have to do this to, hey, I really kind of want to do this. This is exciting, especially if they can find one or two other people to work with sort of in a group setting, then they sort of motivate each other and get each other going. And I think that's going to be a trend going forward for a long time.
Yeah. When it comes to working in a group, what do you see as ways that professionals might collaborate either with or without some kind of formal arrangement?
Well, it's when I first started coming up with sort of a value-added proposition, the idea originally was we're going to get all these different disciplines. We'll get insurance, we'll get accounting, we'll get different things that people need, and we'll sort of put them in a bundle and then we'll you know, we'll give them all these different tools, which really wasn't very, very feasible in a formal setting. But through networking and working with other lawyers and accountants and other people, we can put teams together that can help clients based on whatever they need. So expertise as a professional tends to be fairly narrow, even among lawyers. So if you need someone to help you with ERISA or international tax or something like that, I can't do that. But one of the things I do is I will bring in other lawyers or other accountants or professionals who can deal with a specific issue. And that's what they'll do. So a lot of what I do is team building, sort of the same way a general counsel would. Finding, you know, people that can address the specific issues that this business is having. And then for another business in a different industry or with a different issue, I might find somebody else. So you wind up collaborating, especially if you're in practice by yourself, sort of by default, because it takes a lot of different people to sort of build these things up.
Mm-hmm. And for clients that need these different services, do you do work beyond just making introductions to other professionals who could be collaborators, or do you end up facilitating the collaboration further?
A lot of times I facilitate the collaboration just because they're not necessarily independent functions. If you're, you know, looking to go raise money, for example, the accountant, the financial advisors, the lawyers, everybody's got to work together and be on the same page. So a lot of times we go back and forth and we work together and then sort of loop the client in. So the idea really is for the client to have sort of a team that is efficient, that's relatively inexpensive, and that can meet their needs without them having to go to a big firm where you can get a team, but it's going to cost you an awful lot of money and you're not getting anything more than a smaller group would provide. Entrepreneurs generally don't have $30,000 to go drop at a big firm for routine stuff. So if you can give them, especially as you get more and more of these involuntary entrepreneurs coming online, if you can get them these services efficiently and quickly, then you put them in a better position to compete. And again, what they have to do is as much of their money as they can spend on growth. You know, that's where you want to be spending your money, not on me. What I tell people when they starting businesses is when you spend money on professional services out of the gate, you always spend 2/3 of it on an accountant and 1/3 of it on a lawyer. So you got to get your books set up. The accountant's role won't change as much as lawyers will, because as you grow, you're going to need more and more services. So don't spend a lot of money on lawyers out of the gate. Get the infrastructure set up. And then when you start doing deals and you start having employees, then the lawyer is going to be more involved. So it's really meeting needs as they arise. And that's that adds the efficiency that you don't necessarily get at a big firm.
Yeah. Tripp, where do you see the future of the kinds of businesses that are now being formed by involuntary entrepreneurs?
I think it will depend on the involuntary entrepreneur. I think my attitude is 60 to 70% of business success is being in the right place at the right time with the right tool. And so I don't think that's going to change. I think that a lot of these involuntary entrepreneurs, this is, you know, business ownership and running a business isn't going to be for them. They're going to start out. They're not going to want to deal with all the hassle, or maybe there'll be economic changes and they'll go back to doing what they wanted to do to begin with. But I think a lot of people, especially with the economy the way it is and the tools that are available with AI and stuff like that, I think it's going to give people, a lot of people, opportunities and avenues that they didn't realize they had. It will excite them. And there'll be a lot of trial and error, especially at the low end, guys that haven't, you know, done a business before and really don't know what they're getting into. But the ones that I think it'll broaden the marketplace, and the ones that stick around will be rewarded for it.
Sounds good. How have trusted thinking partners played into your own success as an entrepreneur?
I like to think of myself as a lawyer, as one of the few lawyers in the world who spends a lot more time listening than he does talking, which is strange when you're being interviewed. But because I started out so young. And really, I used to go from lawyer to lawyer to lawyer and just ask them how to handle stuff. So the collaboration for me, because I sort of jumped in the deep end of the pool like a moron, was vital. I also think with as much technology as there is out there, and with things changing as rapidly as they're changing, for example, with AI coming online, you don't have as many coders, but there's no one I really know to call right now to say, hey, I want to implement this AI solution for this particular problem, stuff like that. So I think as technology changes, that sort of, and people get more specialized, that sort of collaboration has become vital. But I'm very lucky because I have managed to meet a lot of people who have taken the time and the extra effort to help me, especially when I was younger, but even now. So, you know, unless you really have a very focused niche, you know, if you're doing uncontested divorces, it's just one form after the next, I think you're going to have to collaborate just to be able to keep up and adapt.
Makes sense. Tripp, if someone wants to go deeper with anything that we've discussed or access resources that you may have, get in touch with you, where's the best place to go?
So I've developed an app called Oliver. We developed the first iteration. We're now getting ready to launch a second iteration. But if you go to oliverapp.com, there's some information about sort of our approach to helping entrepreneurs and some resources for entrepreneurs. I have a Substack, Tripp Stephen Fried at substack.com, something like that. But most importantly, I think it's just talking to people, hearing their experiences, seeing what they're doing. I had a great meeting with a friend of mine who also is an entrepreneur, and we sat, had a drink, and he talked about his business, and I was helping him do some stuff, but he had a couple of ideas that he was thinking about for his business, and I thought, well, you know, for this platform I'm creating, I wonder if that would help him. And basically, one of the things he was saying is that, you know, he wants an experience with his lawyer where he can sit down and have a conversation. That's very important to him. So I can take that and I can use that on my business as well. So I think the best way to learn about this stuff is to talk to other entrepreneurs, talk to people who work with entrepreneurs and see what's working for them. And some of it's just trial and error.
Sounds good. Tripp, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to join us today on Smashing the Plateau and share some really important insights. My guest today has been business lawyer and consultant Tripp Stephen Fried. Thank you, Tripp, for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Running your own business can feel isolating. That's why we created Smash Through Your Business Roadblocks, a live interactive session where experienced professionals bring real challenges and work through them together using the Smash framework. It's your chance to experience the Smashing the Plateau community, a space where corporate refugees support one another to keep moving forward. You'll leave with fresh momentum, clarity, and maybe even a few new allies in your corner. Guest spots are limited, so grab yours now at smashingtheplateau.com/guest. That's smashingtheplateau.com/guest.